We are now back in session from recess, and as we indicated, we are now going to a discussion of expenses. So, I think, Maria, take it away. Thank you. Can we have order?
Okay. Page 1, line 27, is the summary of expenses: personnel, board, admin, programming, development, and community events. Page 2, line 35, is central services. I can't remember, last year we did this, and I can't remember if people were made aware of it. In the past, we used to give 17.5% depending on whatever listener support was for the month. Last year and this year, the previous CFO came up with a brilliant idea, and we have the... It's on the reverse side. So page 2, line 35 through 38. Again, central services is based on 4 years of average listener support, which helps the budgeting and cash flow tremendously. It's perfect. Line 35 through 38. Line 35 through 38, central services. So it used to be 17.5% of whatever listener support income we had for that month, but now it's the average of 4 years of listener support. This is still kind of a placeholder because we haven't finished the year, and National Office hasn't calculated the exact amount, but I'm sure it's not going to be much different than this. So we come down to line 40, which is our net income or loss, but we have a net income of line 40, column O, of $179,000, and that is before capital expenditures. Capital expenditures are items that we need to have. We need to fix the elevator. We need a couple of new servers. Et cetera, et cetera, yes. So the bottom line number, line 42, column O, is that we have a surplus right now of $47,000. Then we go down into the detail of the expenses for salaries and related expenses. Gross salaries, gross salaries, exactly that. It's before taxes and such. Our pension plan, our 403B health benefits are all detailed between lines 45 and 55. The board expenses for things such as this room is on line 65. Line 66 is for the elections. I've been told that we are probably going to have two elections this year, one coming up now, sometime in this very near future, and then one sometime later, but can't be told when. So I just picked a month and went with February. So, that's yet to be seen for sure. Page 3. We have the administrative expenses, everything from telephones to postage to computer supply or office supplies, all of the, quote unquote, administrative expenses. Programming expenses, page 4, line 110 through 125. Again, anything from satellite fees, website fees, tower fees, utilities for the tower, I should say. Line 131, development expenses, anything having to do with the cost of making money. Credit card fees, postage fees for sending out the renewals, the mailings, the premiums themselves, the actual cost of the premiums and the cost of mailing out the premiums. And then line 155 is community events and crafts fair events. Once again, crafts fair events is not going to give us any expenses with the exception of musicians that we would pay for the two crafts fairs that we are now doing. And community events is the cost of putting on an event. And you will see that it's all spread straight across the, for community events, spread across the year because books come, authors come when they come. We don't have any idea when they're coming. So that's the best I could do at this point. So that's expenses in a nutshell.
Janet.
Okay, so a number of items. I see premiums, which had been budgeted this
year.
Can
you refer to the line item you're speaking about?
I guess 146. The fiscal year 15, where the cost of the premiums was way high, and I see that something relative to that is now being applied to fiscal year 16, $157,000, right? That's a lot. And then for administrative costs, so the repairs for...
Line item, please.
Where is it? 100 on page 3. So it looks like there's $44,000 budgeted, whereas in this year it was what?
What's 48.
Okay, which... I thought some of the bequest money was applied for repairs that was not budgeted. So I'm just wondering whether, with the condition of the building and all that, is $44,000 going to be enough? That's another thing. And then printing and marketing, where's that? That's probably under development somewhere.
140.
Okay. So I think it was way under budgeted or maybe not this year, and now it's budgeted for $6,000, which is less than what was actually spent this year. So I don't know how realistic that is. And then a final thing, as far as the elections go, there's supposed to be two elections next year. One election this year, two elections next year. So that's... Okay, I'm done. So I had some questions about some of the items.
Okay, in terms of the repairs to the building, there's two kinds of expenditures for building repairs. There's one that's just the door fell off of its hinges and we need to fix it, or something minor. Someone kicked a hole through the door. Oops. So there's a $5,000 threshold. If it doesn't do a major improvement to the building, we expense it. if it does a major improvement to the building, such as carpeting or elevators, that goes under capital expenditures, which was, I noted, on page, it was on page one.
41, line 41, page 2.
Yes. So those are capital expenditures. So there's two differences. Right. Yeah, we have $75,000 budgeted for the elevator. And minor repairs, again, you know, it's just repairs, just wear and tear type of repairs that don't necessarily make grand improvements to the building. So that's why you only see $44,000 in repairs and maintenance. We're, you know, the big chunk of it is in capital expenditures. Does that make sense? Oh, well, you talk about that. I don't know anything about it.
Okay. Jose Luis, Amargi, Andrea, Frank.
Jose Luis Fuentes here. So, you know, my big concern, just again, from the revenue side and the expense side, is this assumption that we're going to somehow generate $400,000 more than we have on average. And while on the expense side, when I look at line item 34, we do look at the, you know, at the far right-hand corner under W, our average between fiscal year 11 to fiscal year 13 was about $3 million that we spend, and I see that we're projecting we're going to spend about $3 million in 2016. But when we look at the revenue, we are not going with our historical figures of how much we have brought in, which is $3.3 million. Instead, we're assuming we're going to be bringing in $3.6 million. And I'm very concerned, given that just by the hair of our chin, we survived this year by these bequests that came in, not because fund drives gave us more money, and we're assuming that next year we're going to make $400,000 more. And we're going to be scrambling next year. We're going to have to look at this budget very carefully in 3 months and see where are we with this fund drive. Are we going to make it or not? And do we need to start looking at what can we do? Because if I'm a staff person, I don't want management at the last minute tell me we can't pay you. I want them to be thinking about this way ahead of time, and right now is the time because it's here.
Well, you make a good point, and it's something that we've been talking about as we've been putting this monster together. And so we may have to go back and really contemplate layoffs a little bit more, something that we've been trying to avoid, but we may have to put a line in for that because of that. So we will consider that when we make changes to the to budget.
Margie?
Okay. I just wanted to point out that in the minutes that we passed earlier today, the issue of capital expenses for upgrade and repair to the building was dealt with in a motion that was adopted in May that refers to the LSB. The LSB commits itself to there are some words in between LSB and commits, but I'm not going to read them. Itself to beginning work on a capital campaign to raise money to pay for these items without further depleting the reserves created by the station's windfall bequests. And so I just want to suggest that that we, in the not-too-distant future, take that question up and see what we can do about our responsibilities to do a capital campaign working with management at the station to raise the money.
Andrea.
Yeah, there's a microphone. Thank you. You know, I was trying to recreate some of the discussion that we've had about development director. And I guess a couple months ago when the bequest came in and we were told about it, and, you know, I definitely felt some enthusiasm because I had hoped that we would take some of that money and sink it into investing in a development director to get the grants happening and to kind of coordinate some of the other stuff that might be possible. And Quincy, I'm curious whether or not you support having a development director. I mean, you know, it's just kind of weird because it's like last month it felt like we had all this money to do all these things with. And now it looks like we're back to this, you know, kind of crisis mode again. And when we had that little bit of time, which was actually money, there was talk about a development. I'm just curious, what is, like...
I can tell you what happened.
The development strategy.
We were under a hiring freeze, first of all, even when we got the money. So there was no ability to do that anyway. And then the other thing that happened to our money was the national office dived in. Here are some of the things that happened. We paid back, first of all, the first thing we had to do was pay back our central services stuff. So we paid $69,332 for that. The national office could not pay the auditors. So KPFA paid $55,000 for that. Radio stations could not pay their pension funds. KPFA paid $43,000 for the other radio stations. K in Houston needs a new transmitter. T, I'm sorry. $100,000 was given to them from us. Loaned, I should say. And I should also say that those people have put it in their budget to pay us back. So, and their 2016 budget, so that's good. Los Angeles right now owes us $72,500 for helping them with their payrolls. We've helped WBAI's payroll. So that's $707,000 out of the $950,000.
Do you?
That's the one thing. But as far
is that written down anywhere? Like, where can we look at that?
You can get it all through Central Services. They have all the information. But
those are the numbers. We had a copy of you had given your GM report.
Yeah, it's in there. Some of this stuff is in there.
Yeah, but it's not to me. Like these guys, my colleagues on the board were convinced. Last meeting, they said, well, that could be considered part of a budgeting process. I didn't feel like that was part of a budgeting process because out of context, it seems like a wish list and not really part of a budgeting process. And so I guess I'm having a lot of trouble keeping track of these numbers because we're looking at these columns, but there's all kinds of other action going on with the actual money that renders this conversation a little bit surreal.
Yeah.
And may I say again, I think we really, really need a development director.
Oh, I agree with you. I think a development director would
Let's
be great,
it.
And it would
it.
Be a terrific thing for us. But
Lord, what do you say?
Okay, think about a development director. A real good development director would probably cost us upwards of, well, salary, benefits.
70, 80.
Oh, no, much higher than that. So, like upwards of around $100,000.
Thanks for laughing at me, Maria. It makes me feel good.
Around $100,000 or so, or probably a little higher. And also, I do believe that a reputable, probably wouldn't work for us because they wouldn't be successful, only because we are still under Pacifica's umbrella, which is very stained and has a very bad reputation out there in foundation land. Now, so we probably wouldn't get cream of the crop. So my suggestion is, instead of spending that kind of money, we can spend less money, get ourselves a great contract writer to work with to go after some foundation money, hire someone to help us with a capital campaign to help raise the money that we need to do to fix the building or move or whatever we want to do, or at least to go digital and get out of the 19th century and move ourselves into the 21st century with our studio equipment. And it would be great to really have someone come back in and reignite our planned giving thing, because that's the reason why we got that money. because that stuff was done back in 2010, and we were winning the benefits of it now. So we need to get back on that. We're starting to do that on the air, of course, but we really need somebody to work with on that. So you're talking $5,000 for a great contract writer for over a year, because you can do it on an hourly basis, make a plan, put together all the things you want to target best. The second one, $20,000 for a planned giving person to come in and work with us, and another $20,000 to $35,000 for someone to work with us.
Let's do it.
On the capital campaign.
We paid $40,000 a year for Gold Busters. And
okay, we're getting into conversations. And next on the my list reads as follows, unless I missed somebody. And I might have missed one person whose name won't be mentioned unless they squawk when I don't mention them. Frank, Virginia, Jack, Kate, Brian. That was you. Bingo, you were the person. Okay. Okay. Frank.
Hello again. Hello, Maria. Thank you for your budget. Your budget papers. And thanks, everybody, for all the questions you asked. I wanted to ask just a couple of questions about, for me, it's hard to always understand a budget, and I rely on my group when we meet and talk about the budget, and if I ever meet with you, it's small occasions, but in the hallway, whatever. What I wanted to ask is about the... how do I identify? I remember last time there was like unpaid staff conferences money and training money. And then there was also, me and Mickey are the people that get paid for working for your apprenticeship program. It's 28 hours. And then we have the part that we pay the teachers that come in twice a week. Usually they come in. Where do I identify that by the line number? And then I know I just don't know exactly how to identify it. So I'm trying to just like.
Okay. Line item 45 is gross salaries. You won't see your salary, Mickey's salary, or any of our salaries identified separately. It's all under line 45. That would be including your instructors. It's including board ops, instructors, whatever, whomever gets paid a salary or hourly wage would be on line 45.
And then what about the...
the training?
Yeah, the unpaid staff training and conference
money. The training money. Is the unpaid staff. The staff training is...
No, you're talking about the apprenticeship
trainer's fees,
right? No,
he's talking about...
She cleared that one up. In the past, she knows what I'm talking about. There's been a pool of money for unpaid staff to solicit from the manager to go to a conference like the NFCB or something like that, and also to bring in a specialized trainer, like a speaker or something that could. And there's been money for that. I'm curious if that's there, what line it is, and how it compares to last year.
It is. It never changed from last year. It's still $10,000. And I'm sorry, for some reason I'm not seeing it, but I know it's there because I saw it. There it is. Line 89 on page 3.
Okay, and so...
Can I just stay on that?
Yeah.
I will tell you that everybody knows that this money is there, and no one ever takes... A minority amount of people take advantage of that. And it's...
Yeah, I know, okay, that's why okay, I'm talking okay. about it, because we're going to look
it's
into...
There. It's there.
We okay. had one little issue last year about going to a certain conference, but we worked that out, and then what? So... We're looking into it. I remember because we put in one time to ask about going
Stay
to something.
Stay on topic.
So besides that, we let that go. We're going to be looking into how we could utilize this best for like some of the unpaid staff.
And I have to remind it.
Wait. It's not a conversation. Okay. On topic, on questions or comments on the budget.
So anyways, that's why we okay. were going to look into that. Thank you for pointing those out. It's 89, line 89 for the staff training, $10,000, and then the apprenticeship stuff and all the training and all the classes is mixed into line 45.
Exactly.
Is there like any sort of breakdown of that? I'm curious.
You have it. It's document number 8.
I saw that.
But okay. that is a confidential line or a page.
Okay, I see okay. that one. Thank you.
Good.
Point of information.
What?
Point of information.
Well, I think most of this is points of information. Is this process or what are you talking about? Because I think everybody's got points of information. What?
I haven't heard them, but my question, I just didn't understand if Frank's question included where the money that the apprenticeship program gets from the parking lot sales and from charging people to register, where is that in the budget so we can see that?
Can I say that honestly?
We want honest answers.
the board chair, board treasurer.
Are you looking at me?
Okay.
Barbara is the board.
The big board. Okay, let me say this. I think that this is something that should be done in private session.
Okay. All right. Virginia.
This is may seem like a relatively small item, and I don't know exactly where it is on here, but you mentioned, I know there's costs for paying people to do fund drives, and I really appreciated some things about Andrew Phillips when he was the GM, and then some didn't, but one thing that I did appreciate was that he really tried to involve a lot of community people in things. And I think he was successful, and I don't know the exact numbers, but I think that probably the numbers reflect that to some degree. I think staff meetings of some kind or another, regular staff meetings would be a good beginning to involve. And Quincy, I was really glad you came back so that you would hear this. I think having regular staff meetings with unpaid staff would be a really good beginning to try and get staff people involved in doing more.
This is
not having to have that an expense of helping much more with raising money.
Well, you snuck it in there. You made it an expense. Well done. Well, I mean, no, I mean, you made it. Jack.
I want to observe that at the LSB meeting where these windfall funds were announced, there were two conversations going on. One conversation was, to what extent were these funds going to have to be used to help out our sister stations? And how much of that money was actually going to be available to KPFA? And the other conversation that was going on was a set of proposals as to how that money could be used for KPFA. And those two conversations never really joined or engaged each other. And I think that those people who were thinking about that windfall of money simply in relation to how it could be used for capital expenses or programming expenses within KPFA really should take another look at the way that they were thinking. Because, in fact, as Quincy has just reported, a goodly portion of that money went to support the network and our sister stations. Now, if you're going to deal with that reality, then you really have to be consistent about understanding the position of KPFA as the only really solvent station in the Pacifica network, and not get yourself into all kinds of bizarre conversations in which, on the one hand, you're committed to saving Pacifica, and on the other hand, you're committed to using all of the money that KPFA has in order to deal with KPFA's early, internal problems. Figure it out. There's a balance there, and you have to keep both parts of that balance in your head when you're talking about the problem.
Kate.
Well, I just want to...
You have to use the mic.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to follow up on what you said in response to Andrea's talking about the development director. Because ever since I've been on this board, it seems that no one opposes, am I right? No one opposes a development director. But we never can get one. And you know, a hiring freeze. Well, it seems like, you know, rules can be made to accommodate what people want. Can't there be a waiver on this hiring freeze for something that has been universally approved for years and years? And the list of monies that you explained the dispensation of, are a good number of them not expected to be repaid? I mean, I just don't feel that it was a final, complete answer to the, not holding you necessarily responsible, but just asking, this is some sort of glass wall or ceiling that we come pounding up against, and we never get anywhere. And yet it seems to be the key that would solve so many, potentially, of our problems. And I would even challenge, respectfully, your analysis that nobody wants this job. I mean, we might be able to get some very juicy, competitive person who takes it on for, you know, any number of reasons. So I just like to put it back out there.
Brian.
That's not me. I have a question and then a motion, if the chair will indulge me for both.
Sure.
Quincy, of the development spending, the grant writer, the like major donor person that you mentioned doing through contractors, how much of that's currently in the budget?
Just the contract writer.
The grant writer?
The grant writer.
Like 144. Okay. Here's my motion, and I think this budget's a great start, and I think there's still a few unknowns, which the motion's going to get into. But I wouldn't feel comfortable passing this today. I think it should go through some revision and come to us at our September meeting, which is the 12th. And this would be a starting point if people want to throw more points into here. That's what it's here for. KPFA Local Station Board advises management to make the following changes to the proposed fiscal year 2016 budget as follows. One, budget for the expense of a capital campaign to pay for the capital improvements in the current budget, and stipulate in the budget that no money shall be disbursed to replace major capital items that have not yet failed unless and until the full amount has been raised through a capital campaign for them. Two, analyze and correct, if necessary, the budgeted spending on premiums. And three, apply any savings or windfall, for example, from reduced central services, unforeseen bequests, reinstated CPB funding, etc., toward reducing annual days of fundraising toward a target of 60 days per year.
Is there a second? All right. Andrea?
Wait, let me okay. Motivate it.
Okay, go ahead.
So we haven't actually set the formula for central services for the coming year. It's because the national office has been very delayed in giving us a budget at the national level, telling us what their needs are. And our goal has been to set central services no higher than necessary to fill the national office's needs. In other words, we don't want them to just be accumulating cash. There is a possibility, and I hope so, that we could get lower central services that might free up some wiggle room in next year's budget. But that's still a unknowable in this budget. So is the CPB funding. We're currently going through the audit that should clear the last hurdle we need to get some amount of money from CPB reinstated. I'm sure they could come up with all kinds of reasons not to give us any, so we certainly shouldn't count on it. And it will almost certainly be decreased because of our lateness. But we should, I think as part of the budgeting, we should be talking about the what-ifs as well. Not counting on anything like that, but the what-ifs. I agree with Janet's concern about premiums. I don't see how we can expect listener support to go up by $400,000 while our spending on premiums drops. I mean, it's just not. I know that this is coming from formulas that you didn't come up with that are in the new template, but we got to fix those where we can, or we're going to get stuck. The formulas from Pacifica last year made us way under budget premiums. That's one of the reasons we were in a crunch. And to me, and the board can talk about priorities, I think things like a new elevator, these are the kinds of things we can fundraise for, right? And if we pay someone who knows how to put together a fundraising committee with some big names at the top of it and systematically reach out to donors, we can pay them as a contractor. Let's do it. Let's put that in the budget. But let's be clear. We don't pay for the new elevator just because we have money. we pay for the new elevator after we've got, you know, four or five people psyched to have their names on a plaque next to the new elevator, and it's not costing us anything that we already have. Because I think what little we have left, we got to keep in reserve for the unknowable. And I think we have to have a plan for moving towards less days of fundraising. We can't wind up in the downward spiral that WBAI has been in for years and that KPFK started down over the last year. Because once we drive away our audience with too much fundraising, we don't have the money or the means to get them back.
Andrea.
Thank you.
Stretching or have your hand up?
I'd like to just recall that at the last meeting, at the July 11th meeting, this motion was passed. I know we don't have minutes, but here's Brian's proposal was that we request that management create a cost estimate plan for detailed estimate of what it would cost to have a development director and what goals we would have for a development director, and that this should be presented in tandem with the draft budget.
I did not. I failed. That was my failure.
It's okay. I'm just.
No. But I'm saying that I failed to talk to Quincy about that.
Okay. But I think well, the spirit of it is this: that that we would love to, and I think if we saw the plan, and you know, I know there's all kinds of stuff that goes on in the LSP, but it's possible that we actually could help. And if we had a comprehensive plan, that, you know, multifaceted plan, that some of it's grant writing, some of it's this, that, it's possible that we have some expertise or at least some enthusiasm here on the LSB that we might be able to support a plan like that. I also want to put forward that I think there's something really awesome in what Frank is talking about, that there's two ways of going at it. Some people are concerned about going at it through request and looking for big dollar donors. That puts a pressure on the kind of programming that we provide that might make us want to cater to particular demographics that have that kind of money. But the counter to that is also to develop a really vigorous $25 campaign. And what we've been talking for a long time is like all those premiums that worked so well for so long, Mario Martinez and all the, you know, brain health folks and everybody, that is there a, you know, that they should go to the premium cemetery, and that would be a place online that they're still good, they're just not current. And so if for $25, Quincy, I could get online and access some of the cool premiums, maybe some of the really cool produced events, you know, the KPFA fundraiser, whatever, but for $25, that, you know, maybe I get a sticker and I get a membership number that lets me into a library of videos and CDs and cool stuff. And, you know, it might just be a way of going for both the volume.
Okay. I remind people that we are talking on a motion, and I'd like people to kind of talk to the motion. Janet, Margie.
Okay, I basically support Brian's motion, but I would want to add something to that having to do with listener support, relooking, I guess I'm amending it, relooking at the amount, the budgeted amount in this document, and coming up with a more, listener support, coming up with a more realistic amount.
Margie.
Is there a second for that?
Okay. All right, put it in writing. I'm not going to start a list on the amendment until we have it and we can read it. Margie. A microphone.
I very much support Brian's motion, and I think that it's very helpful and useful to do it this way. And I'm hoping that by the time we consider the budget in September, we may have a clearer idea of what our actual central services costs are going to be. But I think it's a great idea, and I hope others will support it as well.
Did you have Brian?
I wanted to speak to Andrea's point, which I think is you know, it's a good idea. And this is actually something that's increasingly happening in the world of podcasting, which is the only place that radio is seeing growth. It's like the only thing keeping NPR alive right now. But we don't own stuff like Mario Martinez.
You can ask.
Like what?
Right.
Some, you can negotiate some of it.
Don't. Like Mario Martinez. I mean, it's owned by his publisher, which is Sounds True. They have the audio copyrighted. They give us permission to play excerpts. I think what you're talking about, and this is a model that many podcasters have started to follow, is basically firewalling their archives. You know, it's the same thing the New York Times started doing. We pay the server and bandwidth costs for hosting now 15 years worth of archived audio on our website. And, you know, we could tell people you get like 5 free archive plays a month, and when you go over that, you got to become a member and get your own login for $25 for the year. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of where it's not like more cost than it's worth to us. And we should have a conversation because our approach to everything up till this point is we make everything free, right? And the landscape's changing. I mean, I think everything should be reassessed, but I think that's a mission-based conversation or an option that we should talk about maybe at another time. For some of those podcasts, it's like you give away the last 10 episodes free and people really get hooked on them and they're all evergreen. This would be how people listen to shows like Against the Grain or Letters in Politics, where it's kind of like they're talking to someone interesting who's as interesting today as they were 10 years ago. And then those people wind up paying for the archives because they want to listen to more. I've done it.
Great development idea.
Donald, did you have your hand?
Thank you very much.
No. Okay. All right, Janet, do you have your language? Okay, so the amendment to the motion is come up with a more realistic budgeted amount for listener support. Okay, so, and there is a second? Okay. And is there any objection to this?
May I motivate?
Yeah. If yes.
Okay. So for the fiscal year this 2015, the listener support amount was higher than it should have been had we not had these two bequests. We would have been negative.
Bequests are in a different line.
I'm sorry?
Bequests are in a different line.
I know, but in terms of what our net loss or whatever would be, we would be at a loss if we hadn't had those bequests. So again, to me, in fiscal year 2015, the budgeted amount for listener support was too high. And for 2016, it's even more, much more higher. So it doesn't make sense to me. So I would like that explored, and I think Jose Luis brought up similar things. So.
Okay, so by more realistic, you mean
lower.
Can I please clarify that? I have to.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. The reason that we lowered our days in 2015 is because of the bequests. We had budgeted 23, 24 days in May, and we ended up with 18. We didn't do a July at all, so that was 12 days. The 2016 is ramped back up because the reason we were able to breathe and not have all those additional Fed Drive days is because of the bequests, which are on a different line item than listener support. I'm not sure, I mean, next time what I will do is I will very specifically put the number of days for Fed Drive days, but they were less in 2015, hence the less amount of listener support. Does that not make sense? I don't.
Okay. Margie and then Don. And then Janet, apparently.
So the thing, budgets are a guessing game. And you never quite know what's really going to happen, and I don't think we should pretend like we do. I think that it's all right to ask management to look again at the question of listener support and see if it makes sense to reevaluate that and change the figures. But I don't think it's... I don't want to vote for something that tells them ahead of time that they have to come in with a lower figure if they're able to, you know, make a reasonable argument about why what they've got, it makes sense. That's my position.
Donald? It doesn't say lower. It says more realistic.
More realistic. That's the same thing.
No. Anyway, Donald.
Okay, so let's get real. For starters... We got lucky in this fiscal year. We got these two major bequests to the station. Without that, we indeed would not be in a surplus situation. And I'm happy to be corrected by both the manager and Maria if I'm wrong about that. But I don't think I am. Whoa, hold on.
Hey.
You don't interrupt. All of this conversation about the budget here at KPFA needs to be viewed in the context of the Pacifica network that we're all dedicated to preserving. So now we get to the reality question. How realistic is that going to be during this next year? And what I mean by that is we know BAI is essentially a failed station that can't dig itself out. It has, I think, 9,000 actual members. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. Whatever. Anyway, they're not growing at all. Well, I'm getting to that. Don't interrupt. KPFK is in trouble. For a while, you know, they were doing okay. They were kind of matching us. WPFW, problematic. The only other station that is, quote, kind of on budget is KPFT. So as we go through our budget deliberations here, we better keep in mind that we should be as realistic as we can be and hardball these numbers so that we don't wind up in a major problem. Because as Brian just said, our membership is falling too. Well, if our membership is falling too, then listener support will likely fall too. And, you know, I don't care which faction you're on or I'm on, that's the reality. Those are the numbers, and the numbers don't lie. So I would hope we put the factionalism aside and say, how do we keep KPFA alive, prospering, and figuring out together with Quincy and the rest of the management staff, how we grow the station. And I don't think we've ever had a real conversation about that, ever.
All right. I think what we're doing is now we're voting on the amendment to the motion.
Can you read it?
I was on the stack.
Yes, you are on the stack again. Go ahead.
Okay, so yes, I agree with what Donald just said, and but still, we have this budget growing the listener membership is a challenge, and we don't know where that's going to go. Hopefully it will go, but we can't, in my opinion, base our listener support budget amount on that. When it comes to the fund drive days that were not done this year, I don't think that if we had had them, we would have raised $950,000, which was the total of the two bequests. So anyway, I hope you vote for this amendment.
Okay. What, do you want to talk now?
I just want to clarify on that point, because this game of what ifs. Our projection for fiscal year 2014 is $2.6 million in listener support. That's $2.6 million after we canceled the one-day fund drive we were budgeted to have on her birthday in April, after we cut 5.5 days out of our spring fund drive as budgeted, and after we cut, I believe, 8 days out of the summer fund drive, 12 days out of the summer fund drive. So $2.6 million is what we got after cutting 18 days of budgeted fundraising. Saying we're going to put those 18 days back in and raise an extra $334,000 does not sound unreasonable to me. In fact, it sounds like less than our daily average. I just think it's a bad thing to do, because I think one of the things that has been driving down our membership in the long term is that we spend too much time fundraising. So I don't think these numbers are unrealistic. I think these numbers represent a bad strategy. And that is an important distinction to me.
Okay. Amen. So let's have the vote.
Can you read
is it all right if we have it by hand?
Can we read
it is one? Amendment to Brian's motion. Come up. This is the things that are listed, asking among the things. This is in addition to the things that Brian listed, to be asking that management bring next month the budget with the following things, and this is the one that Janet adds. Come up with a more realistic budgeted amount for listener support. Okay. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed. Okay, it's 7 yes, 8 no. All right, and abstentions? 2. Okay, all right. Now on the main motion, the KPFA LSB advises management to make the following changes to the proposed fiscal year 2016 budget as follows. 1. Budget for the expense of a capital campaign to pay for the capital improvements in the current budget, and stipulate in the budget that no monies will be dispersed to replace major capital items that have not yet failed unless or until the full amount has been raised through a capital campaign. 2. Analyze and correct, if necessary, budgeted spending on premiums. 3. Apply any savings or windfall, e.g. from reduced central services, unforeseen bequests, reinstatement of CPB funding, etc., toward reducing annual days of fundraising toward a target of 60 days per year. Okay. So all of those in favor of the main motion, please raise your hands. Is there anybody voting no? So it's unanimous. Yeah. Fabulous.
Abstention.
And an abstention. One abstention. Okay. Fabulous. I think that concludes the discussion of the budget for this month, because we've sent them to with some instructions to come back next month with another budget, taking into consideration these things that have been noted. I want to notice that as we reconfigured the agenda, there is one thing that's outstanding from the general manager's report that hasn't been done, which was the Margie had said the, where was it? I've got it written down here somewhere. Anyway, something about the evaluation. I wanted to, and you said that you didn't think that had to be in an executive session. So it's a process question. So I'd like to do that, And then I think what my understanding of the agenda as chairman,
chairwoman,
please, is this, that that comes up. And then the other thing that was associated, then we would go to the executive session and then the CAB report, as we're talking about now. But it may be that somebody would say the CAB report should come before the executive session so that people don't have to hang out outside. But I wanted to indicate what my understanding of what we have done so far is. Janet.
Yes, so I move that we do have the CAB report before going into executive session. CAB report and the CAB nominations and membership item.
All right, so... So that's two things you want to move up.
Well,
okay.
It's
all right. They were kind
minutes.
Of moved up before. Yeah,
yes,
that was they were in tandem right. before. Right. I see that in the notes. Okay. All right. Wait a second, please.
May I just motivate that or
no? Let's just see if does anybody object to that? No. Okay. So unnecessary. So I think where we are is Margie is doing something on the executive committee. Do you have something to change the agenda?
Yeah, it's a question, another, it should be quick, question for Quincy in his manager's report. Okay?
All right. Why don't we have Margie? Okay, well, go ahead.
I noticed that on the KPFA website there is no longer anything about the Pacifica elections. So I just want to say why. And
it's there. We just moved it from the top of the banner, and it's there. It's probably down below. You didn't find it? Oh, that's weird.
Okay, so it's now noted.
Yeah, I'll take care of it right now.
Great.
Take me one text.
Thank you. Thank you, Virginia. Margie. Get a microphone, please, to Margie.
Okay.
Get the microphone, please.
Well, just a second.
No, I know, but you started to say, okay, I wanted to remind you. It's not like you don't always forget.
I always forget. Okay. So let me make my motion, and then if I have a second, I'd like to motivate it. Establish a committee of three LSB members, first by asking for volunteers, or if necessary, by STB vote, to prepare a report on the process for evaluating the general manager and report back to us at our September LSB meeting. Is there a second? Yeah, this is just for the process. Okay, thank you. So let me say that one of our responsibilities is that we are supposed to evaluate the performance of the general manager. Over the last several years, this LSB has evaluated general managers, and there is an existing process and some existing tools for doing that. I don't have them with me today, or I'd do this better, but anyway. But I think we should have a committee of three members of this body that pull together the previous tools that were used for evaluations and talk about how those tools should be used going forward, and that we should establish, we should decide at the September meeting how to move forward with that. So that's my suggestion. I believe that we're required to evaluate the GM annually, and I can't remember when Quincy started. Was it October?
14.
Oh, July. Okay, so it's time. Okay. Yeah, less late than most stuff. Okay, so that's my motion, and I'm done. I wrote it down.
Brian.
So far be it from me to criticize anything you propose, Margie.
However,
I'm wondering about the wisdom of revisiting the process itself. you know, we put that thing together 10 years ago. We went through an excruciating amount of committee meetings to produce something that had cross-factional agreement on what the evaluation process would look like. We've used it in at least 5 general manager evaluations since then. Why reopen it? Why not build on the work we've already done?
So is that a friendly correction?
No, that's a different, that's a no vote.
Hello?
Okay, I'm going to say, I want to say that I want to change my words to say, to review the process for evaluating the general manager and report back on 9/12. Do it?
Do it. Yes, begin the process of evaluating the general manager.
Okay. Then what do I need a motion for?
We've got a committee.
Okay.
Janet.
Okay. Somebody give me some words. I'm amenable.
So I don't think it's realistic for a group of 3 of us to come up with an evaluation for next month, to have next month.
Right.
So
right.
I'm not sure if that makes what you're asking makes sense. And so
right, I agree.
And it's also this body that does the evaluation, not just 3 people.
My understanding, remembering the process, is that everybody got interviewed, that all the staff, all the LSB, you know, so that there's a process in place. And it does seem, I know I'm not supposed to talk, but it does seem unrealistic that that be done next month. But, you know, okay. Janet seconds Margie's motion as it's reformed. Andrea and then Brian.
I do appreciate that it seems like Margie wants to kind of, if the degree to which you wanted to orient and educate the rest of the board about the process and kind of help us to understand how it goes. I actually haven't been part of a GM evaluation process on a formal level. And I'm interested at least to review what that process is and see to what degree we can be helpful or useful. So I would appreciate it. Wow.
Okay.
It's all yours, Madam Chair.
Brian. It's just the last straw, Andrea. It has nothing against you. It's just that I've been doing this for months and months and months, and I just get tired. Yes.
And I realize it's been a while since the board's been through it, so if people want to review the process before they do it, that's why I didn't, propose a substitute. I don't want to hang it up if that's where the sense of the body's at. What we have, and it was approved by previous boards, and every step in the process is spelled out in writing, and every survey form has been approved by the boards.
Yeah.
Which I can send out to people if you want to take this up again next month.
Let's do that.
There's a survey form that goes to direct reports to the general manager, a different survey form that goes out to every staff member in the station, paid and unpaid.
So who does that work?
That would be the committee does the work.
So we have to know those, what the work is.
Let me finish. I just want to talk without someone else talking at the same time.
I feel you.
Then those surveys go out to the board, and the board basically gets report cards to score the general manager on each of the areas of their job description, so they're informed by what the staff have to say. And then it ends at the end of a 60-day process with the board having a meeting and saying, here's the data, what do we do with it? You know, recommend a raise, recommend training, get rid of the person, you know, anything that could come out of an evaluation.
Okay, let's go to what Andrea had suggested when I shot myself. And Brian, if you would send that out to everybody, then we can put this on the agenda for next month. How's that?
I withdraw my motion.
Does that work?
Yeah.
Okay. Janet.
Point of information. So what exactly would be on the agenda for next month about this?
A discussion of a committee, a motion, on a committee that
to
people
proceed or
to proceed. Or, I mean, okay. So that we will we will begin the evaluation process, and that will we will understand what it has been historically. Everybody will have seen all the materials, and then we can go forward with whatever we decide we want to do
with a timeline too. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right, now we have the cab, I believe.
She's really just avoiding. Help yourself right here. Carol, right here.
Thank you, Carol Wolfley from the Community Advisory Board. The Community Advisory Board was forced to cancel the July official cab meeting because although we had notified the station about the meeting for posting, it was not posted in time, and now we have arranged for having cab people post the meeting, so we're looking forward to having that work. I was asked to read this from a listener who attended the last official cab meeting. In the age of internet, there are many high-quality news feeds available to replace feature story news. The unattributed BBC-style service that has crept into daily KPFA news. I've been pleased to hear KPFA start airing segments from National Native News recently. They have been a reliable source for decades, a voice from across the Indian country, which definitely serves the diverse interests of KPFA listeners and which is much more locally sourced than anything from FSN. Unlike FSM, their stories are always attributed. Similar news sources exist for other constituencies. This Way Out, National LGBTQ Channel is one. Black Agenda Report has a radio feed. There are excellent radio shows on climate change like Radio EcoShock. We do not suffer from a shortage of timely, quality, and probably free and very affordable audio sources of national and international news and analysis of interests of our listeners. New American Media is a consortium of 3,000 outlets of color across the nation. I'm sure this would be a rich source of reporting. Even the CBC, Canadian Broadcasting, while white-dominated and still crown colony-infused, is better than FSN. So people are very concerned about news, and also we wanted to follow up with saying that the Community Advisory Board is very interested in local community news being organized and formed with a network, and we want to propose that the board create a task force that has cab members, has community members from the North Bay, the South Bay, the East Bay, and San Francisco, and that we have a task force with the cab and the LSB and news staff members to ensure that there's a stronger network for reporting the news. And I have also submitted a request to add Rich Stone, who is here and who spoke earlier in the day, to become a member of the Community Advisory Board. And Rich, do you want to pass out your, do you have nomination forms to pass out? Yes. So, thank you.
I'm getting ready to leave, and I had arranged for Margie to take minutes and for Craig to take over the chair. Craig says that he's too exhausted to take over the chair, having had very little sleep last night. So either I can ask Margie to take over the chair and Craig to keep going minutes if people do not object to that. Otherwise, I will leave, and you can scramble and figure for yourself.
I second Margie.
Is that all right?
You can't see down there.
And I apologize to Andrea.
We need one more.
also have this local news thing. We also have an item on the agenda for local news. Okay. It's true,
okay.
You're right.
We're on the CAB report, and it's my understanding that we've been handed a nomination form. And are you asking us to take action on this today?
Yes, I did send the nomination form in the mail.
Okay.
By email twice.
Okay, great, thank you. Okay, Brian and then Janet.
Just a few questions. Didn't we stop running feature story news a couple years ago?
Yes.
What? On what?
When? I haven't heard. I listen to the news all the time. I'm sorry.
Just a clarification, we have not paid for that feature story news. So,
feature story news, I believe, is a free service. FSRN. Okay, well, I'm happy to hear it. This was from a listener. Brian, it's your understanding that feature story news is not part of the news department?
Well, it's never been part of the news department. A prior regime at Pacifica negotiated a contract for the entire network under which their stories were made available to us, and sometimes we use them to fill holes in our newscasts. But
are they being used at this time?
My understanding was we ditched them 2 years ago.
Quincy, is that your understanding too?
Three years ago. The people from the Morning Mix got moved into the time slot they had.
Okay, this is from a listener who was concerned that feature story news was
Thank you. No, but I mean, I think it speaks to the importance of, like, you know, we get emails too, but we need the CAB to go out.
Thank you.
And just, you know, on the idea of a news task force, we have one of the most open news structures in broadcasting. We run trainings every 6 months to get volunteer reporters up to speed and filing in our newscasts. It's how I learned how to do radio. It's how Mitch Jeserich learned how to do radio. It's how our program director, Laura Privis, learned how to do radio. We also do internships on a case-by-case basis for people who can commit more than one day a week. We don't need a task force. If you got people, put them to work making the news. Just bring them in the doors, put them to work. We will train them and put them on the air. That's what we need, unless the task force has a way to get a bundle of money to put people on salary. And my question is, how many members does the CAB currently have, and why does it think it needs to grow its size?
The CAB currently has, there's one member who recently moved to Alaska. There's one person who has not come to a meeting, so we are probably at 9.
Margie?
Well, Brian asked a question. Does that...
When we fill
10 names are on the roster, and okay. Two are possibly non-functional.
Two of the 10? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, of the 10 may not be part of the CAB.
Okay.
And does it
we had such a long period from when those people were nominated in February to when they were accepted in July that things fell through the cracks.
Okay.
Does it require a vote of this board to remove the two people who aren't participating?
Yes.
Yes, and I'm not proposing that at this time. I'm proposing to add Rich Stone, who came and who is attending meetings and who is doing work on the CAB. Part of the problem with the CAB is we want people to be able to do the things like the posting and the CPB requirements, so we would like Rich to be part of the CAB.
Margie? I would like to suggest that we have an item on the agenda for next month's meeting on the CAB, and that we have a complete report from the CAB on how many members you have, so that this body can vote to remove anyone who is no longer functioning and add whatever needs to be added. And I apologize to Richard, but I think we should wait until we have that information before we take any action on this. That's my proposal.
Chair?
We need a report from the CAB on how many members you have.
We have 10 members.
Okay. But however, you just said that there are possibly two members who are no longer functioning. So we need that information.
I just gave it to you. There are two members who are...
No, Carol, I'm saying we need to know their names. We need to know who they are.
And Merle
we need,
Saunders.
And we need you to confirm with them that they are no longer willing to serve on the CAB so that this body can do its proper job.
Oh, could you... Point of information, are you wanting to have a certain number of people? Because in this, the Pacific...
I know what it's up to the number. It's up
24.
To 24.
Yeah.
But I think it's the responsibility of this body to decide, to figure out whether or not 24 makes sense and whether or not we want to have that's our job. We get to appoint members to the CAB. That's our relationship with the CAB, okay? So yes. I'm just saying that we need to have a fuller discussion about this. And I know we've been doing this very piecemeal, but I personally will take responsibility for making sure that we have an item on the agenda and that we deal with it at the next meeting. Okay?
So I would like to just respond by saying that if you're wanting to have more listenership and you're wanting, one of the ways to build listenership is to have more connection with the community. And part of the way to have connection to the community is to build the outreach committee and the community advisory board and to build networks. Because you can't have listenership if you don't have connection with the community. And it's not
point
like...
Point of order.
I don't think...
Excuse me.
I don't think this is...
You're chairing the meeting.
Yeah,
You're making a proposal. I mean,
Got
that's...
It.
May
okay,
I... And I want it to be recognized.
Okay,
may
hold on,
I?
Hold on. Okay. I apologize. I don't know that I don't get to make a proposal, but anyway, I made a proposal. I eventually will ask the board to vote on it. Janet.
Okay, so I wanted to address the FSN. I think it's been less than 3 years. It's maybe been 1 year since there was one reporter with a British accent who I think was part of FSN, and I myself have heard him on the news without a name and without an attribution, not maybe in the past few months or 6 months, but in any case, I wondered about that, and I don't know whether that's what this was about. When it comes to the nomination for Richard Stone, I move that he be added to this CAB today.
Okay. Is there a second?
I second it.
Okay. So now we're having a discussion on this motion. Would you write it down, please, Janet? Thank you. Brian.
I move to postpone the motion till next meeting and request a report from the CAB on which members should be removed due to non-participation.
Okay. So would you write it down, please? So a motion to postpone is debatable? Okay. So now we're talking about Brian's motion, not Janet's motion. Brian's motion is to postpone Janet's motion to the next meeting and to request that the CAB make a report to us about members who may need to be removed because they are not either willing or able to continue participating. Okay? And I will recognize the people who have their hands up. Frank, Andrea, Cynthia, and Janet. Go ahead, Frank. Somebody else needs to keep time. I was keeping time.
I'll try to be brief. There is an agenda item on here, and she has sent out the thing twice to us. It's a person to be on the community advisory board. I don't think it's such a big deal that we could all just say yay, and he could be on there. And then maybe she could just bring back a report next time. They're just doing work in the community, gathering information. Like I said, it's on the agenda today. The nomination and the CAB report are together on the agenda. You know, it's not a critical position here. It's something that's going to help KPFA. It's going to help the community advisory board. It's just one more person to help do some footwork. He's here. It's on the agenda. Why don't we just vote on it? Why don't we just vote on it right now and just get it over with and then allow her to bring a report next time?
Thank you. Can someone time it? The speakers have 3 minutes, please.
I have a point of information.
Well, I want to know who's volunteering to time.
I will time us.
Thank you, Frank.
Point of information.
What is your question, Janet?
So, Carol, how many members can the CAB have?
24.
Andrea, you're next on the list.
Yeah, I just want to notice that this conversation took a really wild, strange turn. Like, this totally wasn't what the point of the conversation was. The point of the conversation started out to be asking a question about, are we providing enough local news to satisfy and to engage communities in the North, South, San Francisco, and different surrounding areas? And so my understanding was that what was being asked of us was to try to facilitate that kind of conversation where it wasn't just the CAB talking to themselves, but it was the CAB engaging with the news department to understand how news is provided, to, you know, kind of like an information gathering sort of question. And then it turned into this kind of like interrogation of the CAB members, which I don't know if you guys are keeping that close track, but in July you voted Merle Sanders onto the CAB. That would be your basic last month. So now, and so he's the guy that they've been having trouble coordinating and getting a meeting time when he can make it. So, you know, this report and this postponing nominations, it seems like you're kicking the can down the road unnecessarily. You don't need to make Richard Stone's nomination contingent upon whether or not Merle Sanders, you know, can make Sunday at 11 o'clock meetings. Like, we're micromanaging. It just feels like you're missing the point. So the point is community engagement. All right, so let's not postpone. Let's go ahead and vote, whether you know what, let's hear about Richard and see if he wants to be on the CAB. I hear we have a lot of vacancies.
Cynthia.
I just think it is, you know, exactly. What's the big deal about common courtesy would say we have 15 vacancies on the CAB. I haven't remembered that this was an issue. Can we just call a question? And I actually do seem to hear featured story news. I don't have the best memory, but it seems to me that I do hear it fairly often. So I don't think that person, that one member, was out of line. So I want to support what Frank and Carol said strongly.
Thank you, Cynthia. Janet.
I call the question.
All right. So we're going to be voting on Brian's motion to postpone. Then we're going to be voting on Janet's motion to move forward with the nomination. Is that right? Okay. If Brian's motion fails, then we'll be voting on Janet's motion. So I'm going to ask the secretary to read Brian's motion.
Okay. To postpone Janet's CAB motion until the September meeting, and Janet's CAB motion is to add Richard William Stone III to the CAB. Okay. So Brian's motion is postpone Janet's CAB motion until the September meeting of the KPFA LSB and request a report from the CAB on which members should be removed due to non-participation.
Okay. So we're voting on that motion now. All those in favor, please raise your hands. Okay. Do it again. I'm sorry. I was confused. Everybody in favor, please raise your hands. Those opposed? Okay. Abstentions? Barbara and Rich? And okay. It passed. No? Six yes, seven no? I mean, seven yes, six no. Okay. I'm sorry.
So that's Brian's motion, failed, 6 yes.
Oh, got it. Okay. So now we're voting on Janet's motion, which is to add Richard William Stone III to the CAB. Is there any objection to Janet's motion? Brian?
The debate's not closed on it yet.
Okay. Oh, all right. Okay. You're right. We're back on debating Janet's motion.
So what's troubling me about this is the idea that the board, which I think is an important board, is like sounding to me like first come, first serve in terms of membership. And what I would love is a report about the makeup of the board, how many people you think you need in order to be effective, the extent to which you reflect the community that you're trying to represent. Does the board have holes it needs to fill in terms of diversity in age, in ethnicity, in national origin, in expertise? What are your goals in terms of your membership, and how does a given nomination move you towards those goals? What I don't want to do is just start flippantly adding people, as we apparently did last month, who aren't even going to show up to meetings till you get to the point where you can't make a quorum. So I don't know why we need an 11th person on the CAB. I think that big boards are bad and ineffective. That's certainly been my experience with them. And I would like a presentation from you all that says how a given nomination is going to make you a stronger board and us a stronger station.
Do you have a motion, or is that you just?
Oh, I'm explaining why I'm going to vote no at this point.
Okay,
I already
thank
made
you.
A motion to postpone.
Okay, all right, thank you. I want to provide a piece of information. I forget which body it is requires us to have the CAB, the CPB? Okay. What they say about membership is that you must have a minimum, I believe, of 4 members and a maximum of 24. So there aren't, I just want to be clear that there's not a certain number of vacancies on this body. This body decides how many people should be on the CAB and gets to appoint them. Okay. So then I saw Mark and then Janet. Oh, and Virginia. I'm sorry, yes. Mark, Virginia, Janet.
Along with Brian, I'm having some concerns as well. With no offense to Mr. Stone, I'm looking at his resume, and I'm really not seeing anything that qualifies him to advise on programming. What I'm seeing is that he's a bunch of organizations, and he's an activist and done all these things, but I don't see anything in terms of radio production, programming, program development. And that leads me to the question, how many other people in the CAB know what a community needs assessment really is? Because that's what you're supposed to be doing, is a community needs assessment. And that's required under the FCC license as well as by the CPB. You can't do that with just 5 or 6 people who are doing the same thing or the same age, the same bracket.
Thank you.
What I'd like to see is the roster of who's on the CAB. Because if it's not reflecting the diversity of community, both social, economic, and ethnic, as well as age and gender, then we have a problem with the CAB itself.
My speaker's list is Virginia, Janet, and Andrea, although I think they both Janet and Andrea already spoke on the subject. I don't know. I'm totally confused. Not on this one. Okay, Virginia, go ahead.
The CAB doesn't, members of the CAB, as outlined by the CPB, do not have to have programming experience. It has to do with communities that listen to the radio. He's in Veterans for Peace. I guess he's a veteran. San Francisco Labor Council. Those seem like things. The main thing, I mean, CABs have traditionally been whoever showed up to fulfill the legal requirements. And I think I wouldn't have spoken on this if Brian hadn't already made such a point. But to me, I want to appreciate how much work this particular CAB has done. As in contrast to previous CABs that barely fulfilled the legal requirements. And I think it's great that they've gone out and tried to get people to be on the CAB.
Okay. Next on the list is Janet.
I called a question.
Is there any objection coming to a vote? We're voting on Janet's.
Have we heard a word from Mr. Stone?
Yeah, we did. He spoke during.
What, do we,
He spoke during public comment.
Phone, please.
It's okay. It's okay. It doesn't matter. He spoke. Andre asked if we've heard from him. He spoke during the public comments, and he's very kindly handed us a form with all of his information on it.
But I'm sorry, has he had an opportunity to? A lot of questions were raised about his involvement, his connections, why he's on the cab, and so forth.
Okay.
It seems like it might be at least a courtesy we could extend to him to let him speak for himself.
would be more than we know about other people we've appointed to the cab. What's your point of order, Brian?
Motion to close debate is not debatable.
Thank you.
If it's voted down, we can go to
Okay. If you vote down the motion to close debate, then we'll have more debate. Is there anyone opposed to closing debate?
No.
Okay. One person. All those in favor of closing debate, please raise your hands. Clearly. We need two-thirds. We clearly had that. Okay. So now we are, the debate is closed, and the secretary will read the motion, and we will vote on it. You, secretary.
The motion is moved to add Richard William Stone III to the cab.
Okay. All those in favor, please raise your hands.
How can you don't know him?
Those opposed?
Just on principle.
Abstain. Okay. That's right. So so the motion carries, and welcome to the cab.
With all due respect to everyone for and against it, I just want to thank you for just for carrying through the process that you did and allow me to come aboard. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Executive session. Okay, so at this point we have to ask the people who are not, I'm sorry, we need to ask the people who are not members of this body to leave. We appreciate your being here. We appreciate your patience. And we're going to go off the record. We can turn the recording off now.